It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
My thoughts and prayers for those affected by Hurricane Harvey. Nothing can defeat the unbreakable spirit of people of Texas and Louisiana.
A harrowing and heart-wrenching situation unfolding in Houston.
Flooding, shutting down highways and byways, turning them into waterways.
And I've been in law enforcement 28 years, and this is the worst I've ever seen.
We're still breathing, but it humbled us.
I love this town. I love these people.
I just try to save people that are stuck in their homes. You just got to look out for everybody.
You see people pulling together and helping thy neighbor, and that is pretty powerful to watch.
We will accept everyone who comes to this shelter. We're not turning anybody away.
We will not stop until we get as far as we can.
We're going to come back. I know we are.
We are one American family. We hurt together. We struggle together. And believe me, we endure together.
That was the montage from Fox this morning, and I just thought it was so wonderful. And I think, you know, as we see the devastation in Houston and the areas around it, for those of you that are in the center of it, what we see is just greatness again. I do have a bias. I will say it right up front. I know that there are so many people in Houston who love Jesus, whose lives have been changed. Who are selfless. You know, it is not necessarily natural to save human life. I mean, when you go to third world countries, sometimes people will be found in difficult circumstances, will have an accident, will be found on the roadside, and people will just let them die. Walk past, walk over the bodies. Same things happen in India. When the bodies float on the river, people don't care because life is not precious. Abortion is not a big deal to them. But in a culture so steeped, in the preciousness of life because of the God that our fathers chose to serve and handed down through the generations, the sacredness of life, we have a people that values life. Even if they don't understand, they don't connect the dots, they don't understand why they value life, it's because they are part of the recipient of that kind of heritage, the Judeo-Christian heritage, we call it, where life is precious, and people make sacrifices. And also, when these kinds of disasters happen, then people give perspective. They have perspective because they believe in something greater than themselves, and I think that's what we're seeing in Houston. You know, I remember seeing this in the Oklahoma City bombing. That was in the early years of my radio life. I was on the air in Chicago when that happened, and we were, you know, it was so stunning because we hadn't had a kind of an attack like that, some sort of a terrorist thing inside our country. It was a brand new concept. But the thing that I really noticed was the way the people of Oklahoma dealt with it. It was a thing to behold. It really and truly was. And I think that the thing that made it different was that there were tons of people in Oklahoma who understand who God is and who their Savior is, and have pledged their lives, conformed their minds, and they're ready to rise up to a challenge. They just respond differently. And that's what we're seeing in Houston. For those of you that are down there, I thank you for that, because this is a nation that's struggling in so many ways, confused, being torn apart, materialistic, completely absorbed with phones and electronics and entertainment and decadence. And this, I'm not happy for your suffering. Please don't misunderstand me. But I do know that God does not waste suffering. It seems to me He is not wasting the suffering of the people of Houston, because we are getting messages loud and clear about what really matters in life. And it isn't the things that we seem to think matter. President Trump made a statement yesterday that I want you to hear it. Here it is.
My thoughts and prayers for those affected by Hurricane Harvey, and now it's looking more and more like the state of Louisiana will be also affected. To the people of Texas and Louisiana, we are 100% with you. And I will be visiting the impact zone tomorrow to ensure that you're receiving full support and cooperation from the federal government. Tragic times such as these bring out the best in America's character, strength, charity, and resilience are those characters.
All right, that was the president's statements. You know, I have to say that when Donald Trump was running for president, I don't think I ever heard him talk about God or talk about and speak in any terms that were hardly ever humble, really. And that was one of my greatest objections. I felt his ego was, and it probably still is, a great struggle. I'm not claiming he's conquered it. But you do hear him talk about prayer and God. I don't think he's a man who says things he doesn't mean. And so even that, too, is something to me. You know, this speaking of human greatness, I'm going to skip to something else because, you know, on the USS McCain, which was the latest Navy ship to be hit, to run into something, 10 sailors were missing. They just found them. They've given their names. They were almost all in the technical part of the ship. That's the one thing that I noticed. But I... There was a hymn, a Navy hymn that's very famous. I've always loved this hymn, but there is a group of it's the U.S. Naval Academy Glee Club, who, in honor of the deaths of all these sailors, performed this song again, and it was sent to me this morning. And I want you to hear the first part of it, and as you listen to it, see, the thing of it is so blatantly about the Lord Jesus, about God and His sovereignty. This is the way our armed forces used to sing. Not that they all followed Jesus. I'm not that dumb. But there was a standard. There was an acknowledgement. And this hymn really expresses it. Let me read a story to you first. In fact, let's play it, Rob. And then if it's appropriate, I'll come over. I'll talk over it with a story of one of the families of one of the men whose body has been found. Let's listen to the U.S. Naval Academy singing their famous hymn. Whose voice the waters heard, and hushed their raging at thy word, who walkest on the foaming deep, and calm amidst its rage didst sleep. O, hear us when we cry to thee for those in peril on the sea. The first verse, eternal Father, strong to save, whose arm hath bound the restless wave, who bidst the mighty ocean deep its own appointed limits keep. O, hear us when we cry to thee for those in peril on the sea. Was O Trinity of love and power, our brethren shield in danger's hour, from rock and tempest, fire and foe, protect them wheresoe'er they go. Thus evermore shall rise to thee glad hymns of praise from land and sea. And so that was the Naval Academy Glee Club, and I want to tell you just a story of this one young man and his family. Kevin Bushnell was one of those that was killed or was lost at sea because of that ramming, because of the don't get me started on the political part of this. My point in playing this to you is to show you that the American spirit, which really is joined at the hip with who God really is and who his son really is showing itself. God is making himself known in unbelievable and incredible ways that you're not hearing in the headlines, because the people reporting are not, they don't see this stuff. They are blind to it. But this is the story about Kevin Bushnell. When I was out getting some things at Safeway this afternoon and still wearing my Navy cap, I came down an aisle and saw a couple, middle-aged, with the man wearing a sweatshirt with Navy emblem and the inscription, Navy Dad. So as those of us wearing military identification, caps, shirts, sweatshirts, actual uniforms, do say to each other, oh, do you have family in the Navy? Which I said, and he said, yes, we do. I do, and my wife's daughter is in the Navy too. Then me to the mother, oh, where does your daughter serve? Navy Mom, oh, she's in California. Then JB, and sir, where is your son serving? Navy Dad, he's serving on the USS McCain. Pause. He's one of the missing. His name's Kevin. And of course, there's still a chance there could be an air bubble in the ship. I hugged him and could only say, God bless you. We'll pray for God's peace for you. I must say, I have never had an experience like this, so personal and cutting and stunning, and yet to see it in front of me, two parents who were subdued, resigned, and stoic, and yet hopeful, resolute, determined, and carrying on with life, a kind of quiet courage. The Navy Dad's son was electronic technician, second class Kevin Sayer Bushnell, 26, of Gaithersburg, Maryland. And then, of course, that Navy Glee Club hymn comes to mind. Eternal Father, strong to save, whose arm hath bound the restless wave, who bidst the mighty ocean deep its appointed limits to keep. Oh, hear us when we cry to thee for those in peril on the sea. Of course, all 10 of those young men are dead. For what purpose, we don't know. And we don't know what the cause was. I don't think it could have been a good cause personally. We've got some carelessness going on. We've got some leadership that's failing. We have these young, good, you know, intentioned young people, men and women going out to serve, and that has to be fixed. And, of course, that's a political issue. But in this moment, I just want to point you to the fact that God is at work in our culture, even if we can't see it in the headlines. I wanted to mention another story to you, because we're going to talk about this today. I spent a lot of time talking about an Antifa yesterday with Claire, my friend Claire. And I want you to, Claire Lopez, I want you to, if you can, if you've not listened to it, go on our Facebook page or find the podcast and listen, because many people are wondering what Antifa is. And of course, it's a movement that comes out and it's very much in place in countries around the world. It's a communist movement. And the communists hate the Nazis, and so out of the excuse of there's allegedly so many Nazis in this country, which, by the way, the numbers are just amazing. There's probably, from the best account, maybe hundreds of Nazis, actual Nazis, people that identify as that, and yet there are tens of thousands now of Antifa, which is the communist group. And, of course, the media loves Antifa and you know, hates the Nazis. I mean, I think both philosophies, by the way, because I have to explain this as though I had to, both philosophies are repugnant. But what's happening is we're getting a twisted, unbalanced report of what's actually happening out there. And I want to talk to our next guest, Stella Morabito, about this, because this is a complicated process in which, through which the American people are being manipulated by media and by perception. And I want to talk about that. We're going to have a lengthy discussion about it. Put on your thinking caps, because this one's deep, but I know you can. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm
Ryan DeFrates. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrates' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrates' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Putting life in perspective with Harry Reeder.
Well, the fact is, you can't beat the clock. You can't change time by titles. You can't change time by the size of your bank account. You can't change time by cosmetic surgery. You can't even change time by exercise. The sickle of the end of life swings closer to us every single day. You can't hide in the forest of activity, and you can't fool time with gadgets, but you can make use of time when the one who made time has you. That's Jesus Christ.
In Perspective with Harry Reeder, an outreach of Briarwood Presbyterian Church, Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, call 205-776-5200. To listen to additional Bible teachings and other audio resources by Harry Reeder, visit us online at briarwood.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
The state of Texas is preparing for what it calls a new normal. Millions of people displaced, hundreds stranded on rooftops, interstates, and airports closed. More than 30,000 people now making their homes in evacuation centers. Roadways turned into raging rivers. FEMA is now urging local citizens to help in the rescue effort. Hundreds of boaters from Louisiana are patrolling the flooded streets of Houston. The Cajun Navy, that's what they're called. But relief efforts are hampered in part because the rain won't stop falling, as much as 50 inches, they say. The only certainty is that a good many people need our help to rebuild. One of the best ways for you to do that is to donate to Samaritan's Purse. I've posted a direct link to their hurricane relief efforts on my website, toddstarnge.com. And you can be assured every penny you donate will be used to help hurricane victims. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
That rally is going to begin here in just moments. And there are people here from all walks of life, concerned citizens, people from all sorts of different organizations, also activists, and they're all uniting together today against hate. On August 12th, a white supremacist rally here ended in violence and the death of Heather Heyer, and that prompted this march. People here today are calling for everyone to be recognized as equal, and they want the president to change his rhetoric and policies. In all, 1,300 people have signed up to walk. $34,000 has been raised to fund this event and feed everyone. Demonstrators will sleep in rec centers, churches, and houses along the way. And people came from all over the country to be here today, including Jeremy Ellis. He took off work and took two planes from the Midwest to be here today for this march. You told me you saw this on Twitter.
Yeah, that's the only information I heard about this march was that I saw people tweeting about it on Twitter, and I read a little bit about it on their website, and I just felt like I should come. I don't have any affiliation really with the groups that are here, but I just felt like coming and being here was the right thing to do.
Organizers are making safety and security a top priority, and security guards will be walking with demonstrators. People here will start walking in about a half hour at 5:30. The journey is going to take 10 days, 112 miles, and they're going to end up in D.C. on September 6th. Live in Charlottesville, Stephanie Galhard, WUSA 9.
You know, when I asked Adam and Rob to pull clips this morning, I honestly had no idea what an incredible setup that is to our discussion. That's a report by Channel 9 of the march that started yesterday in Charlottesville. I told you about it yesterday, but you didn't hear probably much about it on the news because of the hurricane and the flooding in Houston. But the march started in Charlottesville and is going to be, as she described, taking place every day now, making its way to Washington. But of course, according to Stephanie, there's people coming from all over the country just wanting to help, you know, trying to defend their black friends from this horrible white racism that has ensued, and to show their solidarity and this terrible president who is, we think, he just seems to be almost Nazi in his sympathies, and certainly didn't criticize the Charlottesville problem soon enough, so that means he's a racist, and we have to go to Washington and take over. That's what the organizers are saying. And we're going to be there for several, we're going to occupy D.C., and, of course, it's all because of a good, noble purpose, right? And, of course, what happened in Charlottesville was about these terrible neo-Nazis and all these good people who came to just say, we are against that. And the poor girl was innocent girl who came all the way from Ohio just to, you know, rally against those wicked neo-Nazis was killed by one of the neo-Nazis. And so the narrative goes. Well, that's what many, many Americans, and trust me, many people internationally believe. My next guest, Stella, is a friend, has become a friend to me. She's one of the best writers and thinkers, honestly, on the planet. Let me just say that. Stella was herself, at one point in her life, very much a part of the leftist movement. I have to say, and we won't get off into her story today because we have so much to talk about, but I want you to know this about her. She is a Christian and a strong one at that. And so her perspective is very different than it once was. And she writes some of the most insightful pieces. She is a senior contributor to The Federalist, and she joins us this morning. Stella, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you, Sandy. It's great to be here. Thank you for that really nice introduction.
Well, I meant it. I meant it. And let's talk about this, because now that report was absolutely an incredible setup to what we're going to talk about. Your article is titled, America's Post-Charlottesville Nervous Breakdown Was Deliberately Induced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Stella, I just, you heard this, what was her name, Stephanie Gahart from WUSA lay out the story about that march and how people are coming from all over the country. Is that what's happening? Is that what's happening?
Oh, yeah, this is a projected illusion. This is, I mean, the media has become like illusionists, trying to conjure up images, like the whole white supremacy thing is, you and I know, I mean, everybody really knows that, well, not everybody, but it's not real. I mean, if Americans were permitted to live their lives peacefully and freely, you know, that wouldn't ever be an issue. The whole image of Nazis and white supremacy is an absolute necessity for groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center. They absolutely depend upon the perceived existence of the white supremacist threat. I mean, that's their bread and butter, and so they conjure it up. They have to conjure it up, or at least, you know, create this perception in order to create the chaos that, well, you know, it's always been a divide and conquer game. This kind of dynamic is ancient. It goes back through time immemorial, dictating perceptions of reality in order to dictate behavior.
Wait, you know what? Yeah, and we're going to break that down, because this is like your bread and butter, Stella. But it is not easy for people to comprehend the stuff that you write. Not really, because they don't understand. They don't live that way, thinking that way. They think, honestly, people, I think most people steeped in a Judeo-Christian culture just expect honesty for the most part and
right.
An honest exchange of ideas, and they do not go around understanding when there's a double, triple game. in terms of information and a massive manipulation effort. You know, let me give some numbers before we move on. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which would, under any circumstances, want to inflate the numbers of KKK neo-Nazis, they estimate that the KKK is about 6,000 members nationwide. All right? So, wow. But the Occupy movement, which is now Antifa, I guess you could argue, is around 200,000 members. So that's just to put this in perspective. We're talking about...
Well, not only that, but they're very well funded. They're very well promoted by power mongers and politics and the media and, you know, everywhere else. And so, yeah, I mean, the so-called, all this whole, the Nazi image, there really aren't that many of them. And the one, I won't go off into all of that. But you and I, and I think your audience is savvy enough to know that this whole thing is a frame. It's a narrative. It's something to benefit, those who really are into dividing and conquering.
You know, let's jump into your article, because I'd love to just read your article. Let's just both be quiet, and I'll read. You know, I'll have somebody narrate your article, but no, we have to talk about it. You write, your first sentence is, "Wars are won or lost based mostly on perceptions of events, not on what actually happens. The reality of what takes place in the public arena is always secondary to any projected illusion." Really, Stella?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true throughout history. I mean, when people have the power to dictate public perceptions of reality, they do it if they're not held back by a system of checks and balances or if they're not held accountable. It's unfortunately that's kind of the default position. I mean, you know, if you look at communism, which is the number one cause of murder in the 20th century, 100 million lives lost under, the regimes of communism, 70 million in Mao's China alone. I mean, that was all, what was the whole point of it? You know, create this illusion that we're all fighting for equality and justice, and how do they do it? You know, it's mass executions. I mean, things are not as they seem. And the only way to develop... a sense of discernment is really what people know to be onto this sort of thing. And as you and I and your audience knows, the awareness of how propaganda works is not something that is taught. It's certainly not in public schools, not in college. I mean, the last thing a power monger wants is for people to be aware of their tactics, their methods. But it's as though we are descending into a cult mindset, and you look at these Antifa folks, and you're dealing with basically a cult. And what did you say, 200,000 now?
That's what they're saying.
It's manipulation of perceptions that gets people to behave. In accordance with the will of, those who are pulling the strings.
Yeah, let's talk about, let's just break it down just a little bit. One of the points that you make is that they've created sort of a moral high ground so that the Nazis are the foil. And, of course,
that's
they are.
Exactly right.
The Nazis are the foil.
The foil, of course, they need.
Nobody's embracing the Nazis. Not that, as far as I can tell, including President Bush, President Trump. But that's what they want us to believe, because then they appear, the Antifa and the Occupy and the Black Lives Matter, as having the moral high ground. Explain that, Stella.
That's exactly right. Yep, they've created a foil. That's the whole point of this whole KKK thing, in order to grab this moral high ground and to lend the moral high ground to totalitarian drones like the Antifa. The violent Antifa protesters. And when somebody points out, hey, they're pretty violent too, they get crucified in the press. Like, in Trump's day, there was violence on both sides. And, we're not supposed to see that, you know, nothing to see there. But that's, yeah, that's what's going on.
All right. And so, so that's kind of a big thing to understand, is that they are creating a situation where if you dare to, you identify with these leftist groups, which you would never identify with, because, oh, like the girl that was killed, Heather Heyer, was a communist who came down from Ohio, but that she's not painted that way. She's painted as the paralegal who was just concerned about white supremacism, and she comes down to the rally. So everything is colored and written in a way that brings sympathy to the far left. And Stella, would you agree? I talked to Claire Lopez about this yesterday. We talked a great deal about Antifa. Would you agree with Claire and with others that Antifa is primarily a communist movement?
Well, I think that the drones that go out there, who are used, to promote the purported line of communism, but that they promote a totalitarian agenda. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And as well as Move On and Occupy and all those other whatever Soros-funded groups.
You know, I didn't realize that the guy who shot Steve Scalise was a frequent visitor to Antifa websites. You know, that just puts
a whole
new...
I didn't know that. I knew that he was inspired by the SPLC, lists of hate groups or whatever.
Well, Ned Ryan wrote that. Ned Ryan just reported that in a piece on Antifa, that the shooter was a frequent visitor to Antifa websites.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
But that shouldn't surprise me, but anyway...
Well, all right. Now, one other point you make is that, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier. You said that this polarization of America, which is always, we all sense this. My husband and I talk about this all the time. We can't even, I'll just say this. I was in Scotland last week, and I got into a discussion with a very nice couple. I was really enjoying talking to them. And then she made some comment about President Trump, and I defended him and told her that my husband and I actually support him. And Stella, you should have seen the physical response, the revulsion. She backed away from me as though I had some sort of an infection, you know? And I actually said to her, I said, look at you. I said, see what this does? How did we get to this point where we can't even talk about this? And, you know, she actually came back into the circle then. And we did have fairly good, I'm sure I didn't convince her. But we are a divided country and we are a divided world because of this. But you say that's not really true either.
No, I think that left to our own devices, I mean, most Americans just wish to live freely and pursue happiness in their own, you know, in a peaceful way. In general, we all want, here's the paradox. The paradox is we all want to be accepted and, get along with others. We all want to be accepted by others. But political correctness, which is, just such a toxic regime that's colored our whole, culture. Political correctness exploits that desire to be accepted. And it also exploits that extreme fear of being rejected, and that's how it works. And then you get people through the manipulation, through the imposed self-censorship, not starting to polarize and divide, not talking to one another anymore about what they really feel. And so the natural result of that spiral of silence is, you don't even have conversations anymore with people who might disagree with you.
Yeah,
or
Stella,
you don't know. But you don't really know. We've got these kind of veils that have been, burkas almost,
right,
you might put it that way, that have been placed over our heads.
Stella, we have to break. Let me just say that Stella's article, we're going to come back. She's coming back with me, but her article is phenomenal. You have to read it. Charlottesville's nervous breakdown was deliberately induced. Our America's post-Charlottesville nervous breakdown. And we'll put this on our Facebook page, but we're going to come back to discuss it in more detail. Please don't go away. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. One company's employees were absent from the fast food worker-driven fight for a $15 minimum wage. That company? In-N-Out Burger. In-N-Out starts their employees at $10.50 an hour and allows them to earn as much as $120,000 annually. That's the highest of any fast food chain in the country. They also provide vision, medical, and dental benefits. Needless to say, they have very low turnover. Merit-based pay always produces a better product, greater service, and more productive employees. Did I mention this is a Christian-based company?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Arguably the most brilliant and certainly the most principled national security practitioner of our time is John Bolton. He has served at senior levels in various departments in three administrations. Most recently, he was a superb U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. President Trump is among those who have come to appreciate John Bolton's skills and his commitment to making America great again. So, a few weeks ago, Mr. Trump's chief strategist, Steve Bannon, asked the ambassador to develop a plan for withdrawing from the fraudulent and defective Obama bomb deal with Iran, something the president can't seem to get from National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. Unfortunately, with Mr. Bannon's departure from the White House, Mr. Bolton has been unable to present his plan to the president. So, he published it at National Review Online for all of us to read and promote for urgent implementation. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Anarchy in Berkeley. Antifa protesters swarm at an anti-hate rally, turning it into chaos. More than 100 anarchists dressed in black assaulting people at the march, including Trump supporters. The protesters also chanting against cops. At least 13 people under arrest. Two people who were attacked had to be hospitalized, but will be okay.
That was a Fox News report of a rally in Berkeley Sunday. It was a rally that was led a group called Patriot Prayer. I don't know anything about them. I just know that their signs were no to Marxism. I also know that they decided not to meet, and somehow, I don't know if they didn't get their permit, but they some of them planned to come anyway. And so the police, knowing that Antifa was coming with their masks and their weapons, stood down. And the police chief, you know, confessed. He said, oh, yeah, we did. We stepped away because we didn't want to cause any more violence. Well, of course, they did a tremendous amount of violence to the protesters there attacking them while the police just watched. It was an amazing thing. And one of the things that I saw in a video, I actually posted this on Twitter. It's at Sandy Rios tweet, for those of you that tweet. It was a picture of a cameraman, not a picture. It was a video of a cameraman who was attacked by Antifa. And he was a white cameraman. And suddenly a black, what it looked to me, now this is my assumption, it looked to me like a colleague. A black man jumped on top of him to protect him and begged the protesters to stop, 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 he kept saying. A black man protecting a white cameraman. And the reason I mention that is because do you understand this is not about race? This is not about white supremacism. This is about dividing and destroying this nation using its old wounds, doing it very effectively. And I want to go back to Stella because she's the expert on this. And she includes a quote in her article, which we are highly recommending. I hope every single one of you will go to our Facebook page and read America's Post Charlottesville Nervous Breakdown was deliberately induced, written by Stella Morabito. Stella quotes Vladimir Lenin, the communist thinker of the Soviet Union. This is what he wrote. The press should not only be a collective propagandist and a collective agitator, but also a collective organizer of the masses. We must be ready to employ trickery, deceit, lawbreaking, withholding and concealing truth. We can and must write in a language which sows among the masses hate, revulsion, and scorn toward those who disagree with us. Stella, the main point of that is that this is nothing new, and that's what we need you to explain to us. I know you know that, but explain to my listeners why this is nothing new.
Well, because it just goes back through history from time immemorial that whenever you have a power struggle, those who, you know, the power mongers among them, people like Vladimir Lenin, the Bolshevik leader, people like Saul Alinsky, the so-called community organizer, they have always been in the business of manipulating the masses, trying to create mob action, demagoguery. I mean, this is demagoguery. It goes way back. We see it, and you know, it's alive and well. I mean, you see it in so many places, and our founders basically, were very well aware of this dynamic and how it's almost like a default position. That's why Ben Franklin said a republic, if you can keep it, is what you have, is because it is such a default position in human nature, or at least among those who are drunk with power and are drunk for power. So, you know, it's something we need to be aware of, and having been blessed to live in a country, with the protections of the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, we unfortunately take for granted. We think somehow, I think that's part of the problem, is we think that the default position is that, oh, no, people just want to, most people will live and let live. And that's why when we get the imagery of the neo-Nazis, we can't discern, or a lot of people cannot discern, that this image was to a huge extent, I mean, almost 99% induced by a media that has taken over, most of the media, taken over the reins of power, become kind of an arm of politicos who are, in it to seize power. It's a divide and conquer game. It's an old divide and conquer game. And I think that the quote of Alinsky also illustrates a lot of this. You know, Sandy, that was a really powerful powerful image that you conveyed when you were having that wonderful conversation with a Scottish couple, and all of a sudden, the reaction when you just kind of self-identified, well, I support a president, but that those people had been basically trained to hate and to not see human beings as individuals with agency, individuals with free will that you can talk to and get to know, but to see people in terms of black and white, enemies, us versus them and all of that. So the Alinsky quote, I thought, was also very illuminating, listeners probably are aware of Saul Alinsky. He wrote a book back in the 60s called Rules for Radicals. I look at it as a guidebook in cultivating hatred, because that's really what it is. You'll find that tyrants are always projecting their own intentions onto the perceived opponents. Their intentions are, just to accumulate and centralize power. But they project that onto, the boogeymen that they conjure up, like the neo-Nazis or the KKK or whatever.
Or Donald Trump.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's the idea, is that the guilt by association, that's exactly right. That's what they're trying so hard to do. And they just keep throwing the spaghetti at the wall, hoping it sticks. It's a repeat, 24/7, getting that movie playing in everybody's minds, like your friends or the people that you met in Scotland. It's really unsettling that we've come that or gone that far downhill. But I think the only way around this, unfortunately, it's a long road. But it's kind of, what you did there was really an act of bravery in the context of, what's been going on. Most people, a lot of people, would have remained silent and not have expressed how they felt, out of fear of that sort of revulsion. But it was very interesting what you said there, that they kind of came back. They recognize your humanity, I guess. Is that right, Sandy? I mean, they kind of came back, even though they were, they had this picture painted in their minds.
I think this it was the woman of the couple, and I think that she was a very attractive woman, and we were having a really good discussion, having a reasonable mm-hmm. conversation about things we had mm-hmm. in common, and I think that when I called out her physical response to just mm-hmm. my simple statement, it made her think. Because
good.
I said, look what it's doing. Look at you. Stay pulling away. Just because I said that, what is this doing to us that we can't even talk? What's happening?
And it's really, when you get right down to it, Sandy, it's a war against friendship. It's a war against human fellowship. I mean, to try to dictate the language so that we can't even have conversations anymore. Mm-hmm. That's really the height of hatred.
Stella, I'm interrupting you because you mentioned this Zelensky quote a couple of times, and I actually have it right here in my hand because I wanted to read it. I know you don't have it memorized, although you probably nearly do, but we have to say that again, that Hillary Clinton was a friend. She was a student. Saul Alinsky mentored her. She wrote her thesis about his methods. And Barack Obama also. He was dead by the time Barack did it, but the Alinsky model was part, the bread and butter of his nurturing. And this is what Alinsky said. The organizer, the community organizer, remember that nice little phrase? The organizer must first rub raw the resentments of the people of the community, fan the latent hostilities of many of the people to the point of overt expression. An organizer must stir up dissatisfaction and discontent, provide a channel into which people can angrily pour their frustrations, your function, to agitate to the point of conflict. That was the instruction to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. This is what they learned, and this is what we are seeing on the streets. Stella, is there an antidote to this?
Well, it's kind of a hard one because it goes against human nature and that fear of being rejected. You know, the anecdote really is one-on-one conversation and one-on-one friendship. And, of course, political correctness stands in the way of, or tries to stand in the way of us, accomplishing that. I mean, when people get to see you as a friend and build up a loyalty, as a friend, these things don't really have that much of an effect. They can't have that much of an effect. They still do, but friendship is really the anecdote, the antidote. If you read Jacques Ellul's book on propaganda, that is the classic book on propaganda. It was published in 1962. But the line in there that I think is key is, propaganda ends where simple dialogue begins, like one-on-one. And another good quote to remember, and I don't have it word for word memorized, but Alexis de Tocqueville, he was the Frenchman in the 19th century who studied America. He wrote that classic book, Democracy in America. He was amazed by, all the community organizations and the idea of America, that, we're all one common, not divided really by class, just a common idea of our common humanity. His quote in there I thought was really amazing. The tyrant or the despot doesn't really care if people don't love him as long as they don't love each other. And, that to me speaks volumes. It's about division. What is, again, the polarization that they project onto us is really their own doing, the tyrant's doing. So I don't know how much clarity I'm able to extend to your listeners in all of that, but it really is key that people are capable of looking at one another as human beings. And what we're seeing now is tragic.
Stella, we only have a minute left, and the last thing I want to just ask, and this is impossible, but I hear parents, they say to me so often that their kids, they can't talk to their kids anymore. Their kids are just shutting down. They don't want to hear it. This is part of the problem, isn't it? This is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. They're scared, confused. They they haven't been taught to think independently. And that's a problem, all the conditioning that goes on in the schools. So
we should concentrate on our relationship with our kids and look for ways to interject some sanity in the conversation and the process, but concentrate on relationship and maybe be the antidote in that case. Stella, you're the best. And we didn't even get to the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's a whole other issue for another day. But...
Yeah.
This is excellent stuff, and we just barely touched the surface. I hope that you will download this article. America's Post-Charlottesville Nervous Breakdown was deliberately induced by Stella Morabito. Stella, thank you for your wisdom. We appreciate it so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Sandy. Thank you for the work you do.
All right. And I'll talk to you soon. All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.